This is Weekend Let's Hear It on WMUK. I'm Cara Lawrence. Thanks for joining me. Coming up, a conversation between two musicians who have a long history together. Jazz Currents host Keith Hall interviews special guest jazz pianist Xavier Davis. Davis is one of the top jazz pianists of his generation, having played on more than 50 albums as a sideman for the likes of Betty Carter, Freddie Hubbard, Tom Harrell, and Christian McBride. In this, the first part of our session with Xavier Davis, he's at the piano in the WMUK studio talking to his old friend and bandmate, Keith Hall, host of Jazz Currents on WMUK. Here's Xavier Davis playing Pannonica by Thelonious Monk.
Thank you. Yeah, Xavier Davis plays Monk. I love it.
Thanks, man.
Why did you choose that tune to start with?
Monk, I mean, he's one of those people that I aspire to, particularly as a composer, because it seems like when people play Monk, it doesn't matter if they're swinging or if they're going to do some odd meter stuff or if they're doing Latin. It just kind of plays itself. It's people like playing it. And I want to write music like that, that people like playing, that brings its own vibe. You don't have to bring a vibe and try to make it into something. It just, you play the tune and it's just great. At the same time, there's a simplicity to Monk that a lot of times is lost in a lot of music. And I love chords and harmony and a lot of, you know, complex harmony, that type of thing in my music. But I also appreciate simplicity, and I think that's what I love about Monk most of all. And a lot of times it sounds simple, and then you sit down and play it, and you go, whoa, this is going on. And then other times it's the opposite. It sounds like there's like eight notes in the chord, and it's just two of the most important notes placed in the right place. And that speaks volumes, because I think you can say so much with so little. And Monk knew how to do that. He was a master of that.
Yeah, Monk tunes are the most fun tunes to play.
Yeah, definitely.
That's great.
Yeah,
We've known each other for a long, long time. And this is great to have you in the studio just to kind of reconnect as friends. I mean, we've been buddies for over 20 years and played a lot of music together. And maybe we'll talk about that at some point. But just for our audience, you know, of course, I know all these things about you, but the audience needs to know where you came from and how you got started. So you're from Grand Rapids, Michigan, of course. And why don't you tell us about your family and how you got started in music?
So, like you said, I'm from Grand Rapids, and I went to school there. I come from a musical family, so there was always different types of music in the house. There was classical, jazz, R&B, gospel, and we didn't really differentiate. My dad had a lot of records, and then later on CDs, and I would just basically go and say, what is, you know, I'd see a record and this is a cool cover, let me see what this sounds like, and I put it on and, oh, that's kind of cool, I don't really like that one as much, or, you know, I started to really get exposed to a lot of things, and it was just enjoyable for me to discover all the music that's out there. And they also had a lot of sheet music and scores to musicals and different classical music, songbooks from different artists. And I would, the same way, I would go through those and read those just for fun to see what the music sounds like, because there's no way to find out unless I just played it. So I got kind of good at sight reading, which helped later on in life. I ended up going to Interlochen Arts Academy for 4 years and as a trombone major, but I was playing piano for fun at the same time. And that's really where I got into jazz. I'd heard jazz before, but I started jazz then more formally, taking improv lessons with Tom Knifick, who was teaching there at the time, then and playing trombone in the big band. But I started applying what I was learning on the trombone to the piano. And at the time, I wanted to sound just like Wynton Kelly. So that was my first big influence in jazz. And then a couple of years later, I heard Mulgrew Miller, and something about his playing really resonated with me. And I was like, I want to do that. I actually took a little detour and studied engineering at University of Michigan for a couple of years until I realized that I didn't have a passion for that. I was good at math and science, but I didn't have a passion. And music really, although I didn't know how you made a living at it, I had to do it. So I switched and came to Western. That's where I met you. And I'm, you know, and it was great, because that, you know, just from then on, I was a jazz head.
So you're a student at Western. We were here at the same time, of course. And then after college, you made the move to New York. What prompted that? What was that like for you?
Wow. Well, we have to backtrack a bit. Because I knew I probably wanted to move to New York, but New York is a scary place for someone from Grand Rapids, who's there was no guarantees. I was just some guy playing jazz piano who wanted to live in New York, and I knew New York was expensive. It was different, all of that. Before that, you and I and a couple other guys started this group, the Groovetet. That was beautiful for me because we grew together, we listened together, we checked out music, and because of some of the situations we were in, some of the competitions at Notre Dame and Downbeat, and IAJE, some people got to hear me, and Carl Allen was one of the first people who reached out to me, and I didn't really believe him at the time. I thought, they always say this to everyone. So, but he's been like throughout my career, he's always been there and really helped guide me. Billy Hart was here with both of us, and I know he has had a profound effect on you and me as well. And he always just that excitement of New York. He's like, yeah, you know, if you're gonna do this, you gotta at some point live in New York. And so that was always in my mind and my thoughts. And then Betty Carter heard us, the Groovetet, play at an IAJ convention, and that's eventually I ended up in her band, and that was how I moved to New York. So that's why I had to, I have to go back and talk about all of that, because I didn't just move. I might have been too scared to move, I don't know. But she called me and said she wanted me in her trio after doing her Jazz Ahead program. And she said, but you have to live in New York. And our first gig, I'm playing at the Blue Note. It was August 1994. And I had an apartment. I had some gigs around town. I had stuff, I had a life. And I still had a few credits to finish. But there was no way I was going to say no to Betty Carter. So I ended up taking the gig. I moved to New York, and that's how I got to New York.
Well, I know you spent a couple of years in her band, and we can talk about that some more. Mm-hmm. And I know you recorded an album with her called I'm Yours, You're Mine.
Yep.
Play something off of that. Let's see.
Yeah. This is a tune called Useless Landscape. That's not the original title. It's a Jobim tune. So it has a Portuguese name that I'm not able to pronounce well, so I'm not going to attempt to do that on radio, but it's a beautiful tune, and I mean, I love Jobim in general, but this is off of that record I did with Betty called Useless Landscape. Thank you.
Joe Beam, so beautiful.
Yeah.
Right? You know, whenever I hear you play, whether it's a solo in a band or hear you play solo piano like this, you always take the listener on a journey. I mean, and that's, I think, something that most of us strive for, but not everyone attains that. And you always have that. There's so much shape. We really go somewhere, and then you kind of let us down easy at the end. And it's always great to hear that from you.
Oh, thank you so much. It means a lot coming from you. It's for me, that's why I do it, just for that journey. And I love the intellectual part of the music, but I have to feel something, and that's what keeps me doing it, you know. And I also need to see what else I can pull out of the music, you know. If I played this way this time, maybe I played a little different next time, and go on a different journey. Sometimes I go on the same journey or a similar journey, and see, it always changes a little bit, but that's definitely my favorite part of jazz, and I keep trying to spread the word.
Yeah. So you recorded that with Betty Carter on her last recording. Mm-hmm. And what was it like? I mean, I know I got a little bit of a chance to work with her at Jazz Ahead, which is awesome, but you were in her band for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, 2 years, almost
2 years.
And
what was it like being in her band and being on the road and recording and having her there all the time?
Betty, so we were, I mean, the band changed a few times while I was in the band. But it started off, and it was, several of the gigs were trio, and then sometimes we had one or two horns with us. But we were all young. We were all in our early 20s, so we're supposed to have a lot of energy, you know, because we're kids. And she had more energy than all of us put together. We would go on the road for weeks and sometimes months at a time. And a lot of times they were one-nighters, meaning we'd get up 6 in the morning or whatever, catch a plane, train, automobile, whatever, walk, you know, usually not walking. But, you know, sometimes several modes of transportation, and get there, get to the next city, maybe 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and go almost straight to soundcheck, eat some. Well, no, actually, we couldn't eat. We weren't allowed to eat before the gig, but we could maybe rest a little bit and then play the gig, and then we'd eat late. We always ate late. And with Betty, she was a star, so every venue was packed. And every meal was packed. So, like, when we'd have these dinners, it wasn't just us having a nice, intimate dinner. It was, like, the mayor, the promoter, their families, you know, everybody was there. And that was almost as much of a performance, you know. It wasn't just a relaxing meal. But she didn't like us to eat before the gig because she thought it made us tired. Which I can understand certain things do. I have to admit, I certainly, I'll eat whenever I'm hungry now, sometimes before the gig. But at the time, we weren't allowed to, unless we snuck something, you know. One thing I learned, though, is that because she had so much energy, she didn't accept us to, you know, if we'd express being tired or something like that, she like, what? And then if you said that to her, or if she heard you telling someone else that you're tired, it was going to be a rough night at the gig that night. She was going to work you like you've never been worked before. And because that's all she knew. She played with Lionel Hampton's band, and she had been on the road her whole life. And so you don't get tired. This is what you do. You know, it's like Duke Ellington. You know, it's not a tour. This is life. This is, you know, you go out here and you play, and you sound great. And I don't care if what happened in your life, you have to sound great. And so figuring out how to sound great, at least good enough that people don't ask for their money back.
But when you say she would work you on the gig, what kind of things would she do or say to you?
Oh, man. I mean, she, the tempos that she would call were extreme. The fastest, I don't think I've ever played faster than I've played with Betty. They were just extremely fast tempos and extremely slow tempos. And that's slow is just as exhausting as fast, because when you're trying to keep a slow tempo steady, you have to subdivide and keep it going and keep track of where you are in the form of the tune, which can be really challenging.
Especially with her.
Yeah, with her, because she doesn't give you a clear, you know, everything wasn't, she's sang off of the melody. She didn't sing the exact melody. So you really had to know how the tune or the arrangement went. Otherwise, you might get lost. And so focusing and concentrating like that for the long sets that we would do night after night would be exhausting. And she would go after you and like, you know, like, to stand there and if, you know, she was really rough on bass players. Bass players, they would have to walk, but with just them and her, really fast tempos for several minutes, which is, you know, and they'd be dripping sweat. But it was a great experience. I learned a lot also about listening to the audience and not just having a set that you're going to do and decide that this is what we're going to play. And if the audience likes it, great. If not, then, you know, I don't care. She was very much connected, very connected to the audience. And that was, it was great to see that and how she reacted to different audiences. Because some people, some audiences in some countries are very conservative. Other countries, they're much more outgoing and it can psychologically, it can affect the music and just spiritually, you know, just that going back and forth and being able to feel people and not just feeling like you're in a isolated room somewhere playing music. So that's really important to the music, and she understood that. East of the sun and west of the moon, we'll build a dream house of love. Near to the sun in the day, near to the moon at night, we'll live a lovely life here, living our love and life.
That's East of the Sun, West of the Moon, Xavier Davis on piano with the great Betty Carter singing. We've heard the first part of a conversation and performance with Xavier Davis in the studio at WMUK. A conversation with his former bandmate, Keith Hall, now an instructor of jazz drumming at Western Michigan University and the host of Jazz Currents on WMUK. Our engineer, Martin Clem, recorded the session. Jazz Currents is made possible with help from the Irving S. Gilmore Foundation and the Western Michigan University School of Music. Tune in next week for the continuation of this conversation. Xavier Davis has more stories about playing on the New York jazz scene. There are some opportunities to hear some live jazz this weekend in Kalamazoo, including a Jazz Vespers service tonight at 7 p.m. featuring Reverend Bill Carter and the Presby Bop Jazz Quartet. That's at the First Presbyterian Church in downtown Kalamazoo. And the Jeremy Siskind Trio closes out the Fontana Summer Music Festival. Music begins at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow night at the Williams Theater of the Gilmore Theater Complex at Western Michigan University. Details at fontanamusic.org. I'm Kara Lawrence. This is Weekend. Let's Hear It.